Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel this morning. Very nice to have you on this Monday morning. A lot to get to, so we will get to it right away. Let us welcome our panel, and of course, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Libby Post is with us, political consultant and dear friend and Monday regular. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Nice to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. Excellent. We welcome Barry Lewis. It seems like it's been a while since you've been on the show.
It's been a year.
Yeah. The last year.
It was last year, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Barry Lewis is executive editor of the Times Herald Record. He is back with us, and we are thrilled. Good morning, sir.
Thank you very much, Joe.
You back in the rotation. Albany Law School professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration and Law Clinic, is with us as well. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I'm just glad Barry's back. It's been so long.
Thank you. That's very nice. Yeah.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. And what an exciting morning it is. We're kicking off the lockbox. And when we looked and saw what was in the lockbox, our eyes almost fell out of our heads. We couldn't believe it. This $403,000.
Wow, that's
and
great.
And just people have just been sending their money in and saying, I want this in the lockbox. We can't afford not to be listening to the potential for a Manchurian candidate as president of the United States.
That's for sure.
We can't miss a thing. And the faster we can get this done, the faster we can all move ahead. So if you believe in WAMC and you want to keep the light on and you want to keep it going, and that's the only way it'll be, there are no fat cats here who are going to do this job for us. We have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's testament to the unfiltered desire for news. You know, that's so important.
And I think you're right, right? But particularly the the WAMC crowd, you know, the people who have made this thing together by dint of everybody's effort. And that's what we're at right now. So good morning, Joe. I guess that's the long way around.
Okay. Good morning. Hello. Just a reminder, you can go to WAMC.org to put something in the lockbox, WAMC.org, Let's try it again. WAMC.org. Also, a reminder that the fund drive does begin on February 11th. So,
you know, it is possible, Joe, that if everybody does something today and for the next month, there won't be a fund drive. Now, I will miss it, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, unlike when we all get together, even for a day, and we read people's names and we do all of that kind of thing. But the extraordinary circumstances, this country has never, ever had a challenge like it has now.
It certainly hasn't. And let us not forget, while $403,000 is a lot of money, we still have another $600,000.
That was going
to
be my question.
Yeah, that's still a lot of money. So, yes, we have a month, but
By the way, one more thing. You know, what makes those fund drives go, we all know it, are the challenges. And if somebody we've never made one up, I'll tell you that. You have my oath on that. If somebody wants to make a challenge, the larger the better. But whatever you can do, give us a call at 1-800-323-9262, and somebody will take your call, and we'll make it happen.
WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. So, there's so much to talk about. It was a hell of a weekend. We've got, apparently, our president was investigated for being a Russian asset. Also,
careful how you say that.
Can you say that one more time?
Also, we'll all laugh, but it's not funny.
It's not.
All the records of the Washington Post then reported that all the records of any meeting or a phone call that the president had with Vladimir Putin has been expunged, has been moved aside, has been kept secret, has been pushed under the.
Apparently he's asked the translator to give him the notes.
And not to say anything about them.
Now what's going to happen is the House of Representatives, now under control of the Democrats, will tell the translator, show up and tell us what you know.
Right. And then also, we also know that during those meetings, he didn't want anybody else in the room. There were, in all of those meetings, there wasn't anybody asked to be in those meetings. So that is concerned. And yet, I still only want to talk about Jeff Bezos and his divorce settlement.
I know.
I know, and his stuff that came out.
That made exciting reading this weekend.
That's a breathe deep moment, isn't it?
Yeah, my goodness.
I don't, because then I'm whiplashed back to Lindsey Graham with the cover-up.
With the cover-up.
Sure.
What cover-up? Did I miss something?
Well, he said that the translator absolutely should not be brought before Congress. Absolutely not.
God.
So you can be sure there was a phone call there
between
the president and Graham.
So speaking of scandal, everybody, you know, the weekend was a buzz with, well, what does Lindsey Graham have? What does Putin have on Lindsey Graham?
Oh, I can infer that if you'd like. But.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's a well-known secret that Lindsey Graham's in the closet. He has been for eons.
Well, we don't. Come on.
Well, who knows what they might have on him? That's remember what they did to State Department officials in the 50s who were gay. So, you know, we never know.
Yeah, well, you don't know, but I would have to be very careful as the president and CEO of WAMC sitting next to a lawyer. I think we'd have to be very careful about what we say.
I think one of the more amazing things about the weekend is that Trump calls in to his Fox-friendly station, is interviewed by Jeanine Pirro. Have others, gives him the opportunity to once again refute this, that he has some connection with Putin, with Russia. And it's simply saying, she asks him the question, and he can't say no. Have you had any work? Have you been? Mm-hmm. And instead of simply just saying no, and I find this, then can continue, no, and I find this insulting, and I want to continue to do work for the American people, as most of these leaders then say, he doesn't answer, and he's been asked multiple times. And that's the part that if you're a Republican, a Democrat, you're scratching your head and you're going, why? Why does this man not admit that I have nothing, and he can't say that?
You know what's so troubling about this, that the American people, particularly a lot of the people in the Republican base, will not think twice about sending their kids to, quote, fight the commies. Mm-hmm. And now, when this terrible thing, we've never had a president who the people have suggested might in fact have been employed or been given money by the Russians, and not told us about it. They will not get off the stick. It's still 35% to 40%. It's unbelievable.
What's bizarre is he will lie about anything else, but he won't lie about that.
No. Except he said, and we all get the fact that he was a businessman, he was a developer, and what his sons have said, and which he has sort of denied, and has went back and forth during the campaign, is that he had business interests with Russia, and you can kind of surmise that Russia was one of the few places where he was going to be able to get some money.
And the kids told us that.
And the kids said that. And so he could have simply had said, yeah, I did business with Russia, I was a businessman, but now I'm running for president. You know, but he never handled that well. He always lied. So even
how
now,
how did he lie? Let me get that straight.
Well, he said he had no ties with Russia.
That's right. I think it's so important that our audience hear that.
He said multiple times, I have no ties with Russia.
That's right.
And then his kid says, yeah, we did business with Russia.
No, we can get all the money we need.
And then he said, right, Russia. You know, he's constantly contradicting himself. And so even now, instead of simply saying, yeah, of course I had business with Putin before I was president. But he muddies it. He doesn't answer. He can't lie, which you're right. And so you sort of are left to wonder, what is it about the firing of Comey? What has been going on for the last 2 years?
I was interested, by the way, in how he answered Pirro's question. I remember Pirro's a New Yorker. We went all through that with her and the rest of the stuff. She, the Fox person, now asks this question. He says, that's the most insulting question I've ever been asked. What I'm interested in is whether he thought he was answering her or whether he thought he was answering the Washington Post.
I think the Post. I mean, she tossed him a softball.
Yep.
Exactly.
And he could have smacked it out. And again, he fumbles it, and to mix metaphors, and you kind of wonder why. And he just adds fuel to that fire.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, didn't they speak before the interview? I mean, didn't she say I'm gonna give you this opportunity to clear your name?
I don't think he does that. I think he just calls up and they just do it.
They just
and
go.
Even if they did speak before, I don't think it would matter because I don't think he
has a filter.
Makes the connection or has a filter.
Because you would have thought if he had the advisors that he trusts. The advisors, you know, he talks to the advisors. He says, look, I'm trying to get in front of this thing. I'm going to go on Fox. I'm going to call in. And you know, because, the whole idea was she sets him up about the wall, negotiations, and then she pivots and asks the question. He's got to know she's going to ask him that question.
Yeah.
It's a softball. He can then move into the direction, and he either didn't know it was coming or he just can't lie about it, and he knows the truth.
He thought he was giving a good answer, by the way.
He probably did.
He thought he was giving a good answer.
The most terrific answer in the history
the
of
the best
world.
Answer.
The best words.
No president has given a better answer, because then he follows it up by saying, as we all know, no one's been tougher on Russia than I am.
Can I go back to Tillerson and to who was in the room during the Putin?
One of them was Tillerson. Not all of those meetings,
of them. No, but I'm sorry. But clearly Tillerson knew, right? Some of what was happening. So there he is sitting out there, and all of the top guys who are no longer there. Who knew about what was going on with Putin? I mean, I think look. My feeling is that Mueller must be way ahead of all of us. We can be thinking.
Got his tax return. He's right. Mueller's got more information.
Mueller is
imagine.
Way ahead of all of us on this. But I'm thinking there have been people in that administration, you're fired, Tillerson, or you're this or that, who must know a lot more than they have given out for some strange reason up to now.
Well, it's always that question, too. If I think about this a lot, probably a lot more than I should, if I were in that situation, and if he tells them to leave, you know, he's the president, they have to leave, and they're then in a sticky position because they don't, you know, you can imagine walking out saying this feels wrong, but I have to trust that this person isn't going to sell out our democracy. I mean, these are high crimes and misdemeanors, right?
Well,
this is treasonous.
Yeah. Now, didn't we say we said this though from the very beginning of the I say mid campaign on we have a lot of thoughts and concerns that the president acting this way does not befit someone who's innocent, right? I mean,
right.
So a lot of this comes, I think, as just validation of what we sort of have been living through. I mean, again, the Washington Post article that came out about having to do with trying to put away any information and sideline any information about those visits. But again, we knew all along that when he was going in for the summit and the meetings, there was nobody there.
Yeah. And they criminalized Hillary during the campaign for much, much less. They pulled out Kellyanne Conway's old tweets.
Well,
if you're
know,
under two FBI
new?
Investigations, then something must be wrong. Well, how many is the president up to now?
And remember this.
Well, I mean, you just got to go back to his old tweet from mid-Obama blaming the president for the shutdown. I mean, it's the same stuff. They will criminalize Hillary because it's an easy foil for them to just, look at that woman. She's really crooked and you can't trust women. I mean, that's their message.
And let's understand, this is now the FBI taking it upon themselves right early on to do this. These are investigators. These are folks who, this is what they do. And they saw the handwriting. They heard. They were aware. And so they take it upon themselves to do this investigation.
Let's remember the context. The context is their leader, Comey, gets ousted. And they're furious. They're really fit to be tied. And they say, well, what could be the reasons that this is happening? He stands up with the Russians and he says, what to them? He says, I got rid of that Russian thing. I got rid of that Russian thing. Well, that's a premise that you could build on, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And it's not as if Comey was, I think, as many leaders. It's not that everyone on the FBI was enamored with him. I'm sure there were issues with him, and we've seen over the years that Comey didn't handle things properly
Yeah, he cost us the presidential election.
But yes, I think people within the FBI saw what happened to Comey, as they would almost anyone else in a situation like that. They're listening to the president speak, and they're thinking, wait a minute now. This just does not make sense. And they begin to get – and there's enough evidence just on what – on Trump's actions and his statements.
Meanwhile, back in the real world, there is we are now embroiled in the longest government shutdown in the history of the United States. Now, what we had heard is that and many speculated, and including some panelists on this program, that the reason for this is was a deflection from what was happening with Russia. Clearly, that is not working now, and we are now going into the fifth week, and you have to wonder what's going to happen over the next several days as Russia continues to dominate the headlines and the shutdown just becomes a story that I quite frankly, last night had a difficult time finding a good sort of – there's a lot of stories about what the shutdown is impacting. It's difficult to find the stories that have to do with the negotiations that are going on because there's nothing going on.
Because Lindsey Graham's depressed.
Right.
The Lindsey Graham thing really is the issue there.
Yes.
When that guy says what he said, whatever his motivations were, that we should take a vacation from this and maybe come back several weeks. Because you know that if we call this thing off, nobody's coming back 3 weeks from now. No. To start it all over again.
And we have, like, Senator Bob Menendez is in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Like, you know, the thing is that the way they're talking about the people who are being affected by the shutdown shows how out of touch they are with
completely.
The real people.
Absolutely.
You know, the Coast Guard saying do a tag sale, you know, to help meet your bills.
Offer to paint the walls in your apartment.
Right. And some of these senators and congressmen saying, oh, they don't live paycheck to paycheck. They know better than that. They don't understand what it's like to be in this world.
Or the comments that, well, they're going to get paid at the end.
Yeah, so
well, that may be true, but you can't go into your supermarket and tell the person, well, you know, I'm going to get paid eventually, so here's an IOU, you know, and I'll come back in a week, a month, whatever, and we'll even
unpaid
it up.
Unpaid workers are better off during the shutdown.
Yeah, right.
By the way, Barry, that's interesting because when the New York State thing happened,
I gotta roll.
Yeah, go.
Okay, we'll be right back, and we'll continue that right after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Libby Post is here, Barry Lewis, and Sarah Rogerson. Alan Chartok has letters from you, the listeners, so let's go to those.
Here's a great letter. I want you to wait till the last thing that the letter writer writes understand why it's so great.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Mary wrote, the people's government is out of the people's control. There's something seriously wrong when we pay taxes to pay people to run the government, and then some of them decide not to run the government but still pay themselves even though they're not running the government while begging us poor suckers for donations, in addition to the taxes we're already paying them to run the government ostensibly so they can make other people who are still being paid to run the government but aren't running the government run the government. And here's the last line. Don't you see? Festus on Gunsmoke always said, don't you see? I say it a lot. Okay. And that's for me. Don't you see?
You do say that a lot.
I do, yeah. And Marty says, dear panel, there was a cleverly conceived and executed internet campaign to steal the election. The campaign to steal democracy continues with Putin and its machinator and Trump as its mouthpiece. Our non-vetted political party-hopping president is motivated by one thing, money. He will be as rich as Midas, a.k.a. oligarch, once he is out of office. Can you spend money behind the bars, or what
he is going to come out financially better than he was.
Well, the whole idea here is to monetize everything that he's doing for him and his family.
I mean, setting this up, even when it appears he wasn't going to win, the idea was to set up some sort of a television, some sort of a network, or kind of an off Fox deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the plan got ruined because he got elected.
Yeah. After 2 years of disemboweling, that's a good word, the government by firings, failure to backfill with competent replacements, and accusations of partisanship and deep state, Trump has finally reached his goal, no government. Saying he won't reopen it for years is not crazy, it's the goal. There has been a coup. It's time for the media conversation to turn to how to act rather than how to react.
Well, you know, just real quick on that,
I
think the Women's March is coming up, and I wondered if the federal workers would be included in that and if they might change their platform, because wouldn't it be something for the people to really take the government back? Not storming, but marching on Washington and demanding a return to sanity.
When's the last time there was a march on Washington which really threatened the government? And who put it down? Well, General MacArthur. It was the bonus march. General MacArthur led it, assisted by Dwight D. Eisenhower. And they shot them. They shot at them. I don't see any proof that we're going to have that kind of revolution in this country.
They don't have anybody to shoot at them.
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to have that kind of a revolution in this country as we've seen in other countries. But I do think that we can't underestimate the strength of the resistance. And, the 2018 elections were more blue than after Watergate. And so I think that people are continuing to organize, continuing to do grassroots work. The women's marches are happening all over the country. I just don't think we can discount that. And the problem is that people don't see it on the news every day. They don't see it as being the most important thing in their lives or in really on the news. But it's there, and it's strong.
Yeah, we have checks and balances, and we have elections. And
well, we don't have checks and balances. That's been the problem up to now.
Well, we will this year for sure. Yeah. We're going to have some level of it. We didn't have it last year. But again, what do we have is we have elections that ensure that there will be checks and balances. You know, as we saw post-Watergate, as you see, you know, even this last year, where enough people were fed up and said, we're going to vote, and is, you know, both in New York State and federally, we've had enough of certain things, and
that's
we
right.
want to change it. And, you know, that's why we, you know, there's that old adage about, you know, every vote counts, and you can make a difference. It matters.
You're so right. Okay, and Todd's, Lisa says, what more do the Republicans currently in office need as evidence against the president for them to admit he's corrupt? Obama wore a tan suit and the Republicans carried on it for weeks. Just too much chaos. I don't know how they can ignore him any longer. My head is spinning, and that's from Lisa from Pokwag.
I think it's polls. An inside-outside problem, right?
Polls, right. How will it change? When they see that, you know, right now the Republicans, 90%, 95% support Trump? When the numbers change, that's when they'll peel off.
And when will that happen?
Probably not in our lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, Mitch McConnell makes $22 million, is it, outside of his salary. And so when you go home to one of your two or three homes every day and things feel pretty normal.
I always heard that, by the way, that the Congress had passed a law, not an ethics law, not allowing them to make more than 15% on the outside. So I'm astounded by that $22 million
figure. I think it's a cumulative number. I think it's over the span of his career.
I see.
Been a fairly long career. So
because in New York State we have a big problem. Not that we want to get it to New York State here, but I'll ask the governor about it again. They don't want to. They took the money. They took the gigantic raise, and they say, but we don't have to obey the new law, the new commission made by these comptrollers, who they empowered to do this. They never thought they were going to get double-crossed, and now they're saying, okay, we're going to take the money, but we're not going to do what we were told to do on the outside income.
Well, that's the thing. When you're in that situation and things feel pretty comfortable for you and your family, you don't really have incentives.
Well,
to
don't you understand, Sarah?
Oh, explain only, it to me, please.
I'll mansplain it to you. The senior leaders of the legislature really know what we're doing. Those pups down there, they don't know anything, and we can't let them take over.
Yeah.
But I take. Keep your eye on Cortez. I am telling you that now. I mean, right now, if she put her name, how old is she now?
29.
If she put her name into the presidential primary and the pollsters started looking at that.
Well, she can.
She's not old enough.
She's not old enough.
She's got to be 41.
But if she'd had they would choose her. The people in this country, the liberal community in this country, would choose her.
Well, that's why Beto and Texas is doing is even being mentioned. I mean, he loses his only political race, and yet drew enough attention that people were like, "Wow."
You know who else lost an early political race? Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, against Douglas?
And people are comparing Lincoln and Beto. So,
well, the establishment Democrats have a lot to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you say 41?
I thought it was 35.
Wow. Right. 35.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay.
It was 40.
Yeah, why'd you do that?
I just thought there was a rule that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it's 35. It's 35. For president.
Okay. When you run. So
right.
So in other words, you could run, I think the way it works is you could run earlier, as long as when you assume the office, you're going
on
to be 35.
January 20th, yeah.
Exactly.
You're going to be
35. Okay. Yeah.
I sit corrected.
And Ed says, obvious PR measure for Democrats, a simple concept during current shutdown crisis, colon. The Democrats should secure appropriate national media time and space, then run a contentious video loop of Trump's statement in his December meeting with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, wherein he takes ownership, in capital letters, of the situation.
Well, they don't need to, because the Republicans are polling, blaming Trump for the shutdown.
Yes.
So
the numbers are obviously very troublesome for the president.
Yep.
Yeah, and there is still that great shot of when Trump is saying, you know, I'll own this, and Chuck is looking down and he's smirking. Deep down, he knows.
I don't think he was smirking. I didn't like the way he was looking at that moment.
Yeah, he looked just really uncomfortable, didn't he? Like,
I thought there was a smile, and I'm not saying he's happy about it, but I think he saw the big picture and that this is going to play out.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you, Barry. It was a sort of what an idiot smile.
Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly that. He knew this was going to play out again and again, and which it has. And yes, Republicans are, more people in this country are blaming Trump than anyone else for the shutdown.
But isn't it funny? And I know this is overly simplistic, but the CNN Washington Post poll said that 59.2% of the American people are blaming Trump for the shutdown. And then there's a mix, but then you still have that ultimate 35% that beleaguered 35% that supports whatever.
I hear it in emails and in the calls we get at the paper, and I know you do too. And he does have, it'll never go below 30, and somewhere between 30-35% of people are, you know, it's the same group that also blames Hillary and Pelosi, and you're not going to change that.
No.
You're really not. I've come to that conclusion.
Nope.
You can, you know, respect it and again, okay, you've got an opinion, but those folks are just not going to. They don't want to listen. They got blinders on and they're with them.
Yep. I was speaking at an event at a public library last week, and there was a Trumper in the audience, and no matter how many facts.
Oh well, they don't deal with facts.
No,
they don't deal.
And I was corrected.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I was misleading.
Right.
with actual facts from actual news agencies, as opposed to the misinformation campaign.
I love that a Trumper, because you know what are the names of people who support Trump? Are they Trumpers?
Trumpsters?
Or are they Trumpsters? Or are they Trumpistas? what exactly
Trumpistadors?
Are they?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that 30-35% are with him. Because of the race baiting, because these are the people who are so deathly afraid of no longer being in the majority in another generation. You know, and you know what's happening, you have that, you have the degradation of the Republican Party, right? And they're losing folks. And then you have the generational shift within the Christian right, where the younger folks are leaving those churches in droves because they can't abide by their politics.
And progressive congregations are going gangbusters.
Right, right.
Boy,
I mean, it's really great. I mean, there is a shift happening.
Yep.
And I call Trump the gift that keeps on giving, because if it wasn't for him, this stuff wouldn't be happening.
Except that I would like to say that he's doing an awful lot of damage while
he's here.
He is, Libby, I want to remind you, the President of the United States.
Ugh.
Somehow he got there.
I know.
Is in a position and has been doing tremendous damage. And if, in fact, there is a Manchurian candidate situation going on, if there is, the Russians are making out like bandits.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah. Okay, and Lee says, hugest. The government shutdown is in so many ways the president's gift to his base. He wouldn't possibly end it until he was the longest and hugest ever. One more thing to check off on his ego bucket list. And I must say, in Lee's defense, in Modena, she does put quotation marks around hugest.
All right. So we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have letters. Sarah, you have to leave us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
We appreciate it. You're going to just miss the last segment coming up at 10 o'clock, the 10:05. The governor will, Governor Andrew Cuomo will be on with Alan Chartok. And so we'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll go through the rest of the letters and we'll finish up. Sarah, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Always
and
a pleasure.
We'll be back right after this. As I mentioned, we just have a few minutes left, so I want to go back to Alan with the letters and go around and maybe get another topic in if we can. I do have this letter that just came in, so I want to get it before we I don't think Alan has it in his pile. Ariel says, I'm concerned and appalled that WAMC, as well as all the major media outlets, are blaming President Trump for the government shutdown. The responsibility lies with Republican congresspeople who will not override a presidential veto. All they need is to vote to reopen the government. I know it's fun to blame Mr. Trump for everything outrageous the federal government does, but please stop letting these Congress people off the hook. This extreme mistake is emphasis, miseducates the voters about where the power and responsibility are in this situation.
They don't. Yeah. I mean, he said point blank, I own this.
Yeah, he did it.
And McConnell is not going to he's not going to put forth a vote if he knows that the president is not going to sign this.
Well, let's say McConnell should have some guts, and let's say that the letter writer is exactly right, that the Congress has no, what's the technical term, cojones, in order to do what needs to be done. She's right. Is it a she or he, Joe? Do you remember?
Sorry. I believe she. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is that exactly right? The Congress has to have some guts. They are a coordinate branch of government, as you said before, Barry, and that's what it's all about. Okay. So, but in fact, Trump owns it. He did it. He led it. That's it. Elisa says, is Trump working for the Russians? Doesn't anyone think that maybe he was thinking he shouldn't even dignify the question with the answer? Isn't that question akin to, do you beat your wife?
God.
Believe what you like.
Yeah, but if you're beating your wife,
yeah,
then it's a relevant question, right?
Right.
It's a red herring kind of thing.
No, I understand that.
But it is amazing. And even you said the Manchurian candidate, the fact that, you know, somebody is asking an American president, do you work for Russia? You know, if you take that step back.
Right.
How do we get to that point that question even would come up?
John says, McConnell? Can Mitch McConnell be removed, replaced as leader of the Senate? Sure. All it would take is a majority of his majority saying out. It strikes me that he is the real key here. If he were removed from his position and replaced by a hopefully true leader, Congress could reclaim sovereignty and isolate Trump for the rest of his term. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, he works for them. He is doing what they want him to. He's protecting them because they would have to hold up their hands and take difficult votes, and they would probably vote the right way, which would be the end of them. So they have McConnell doing his dirty work. That's what it's about.
And we saw the last time, and Mitch, who is very smart at counting and and knows history, I'm sure is well aware of how this was handled with the health care vote, and that, you know, cost, probably John Faso his position in the in Congress. You know, put up a vote that is not going to go anywhere.
Okay, so Alex writes, Joe is spot on. Anyone closely following the news could have written both these breaking quote stories from the Post and Times that just came out. Not sure why everyone is so shocked. Been obvious all along. Mueller's shoe, when it drops, will be the size of Wilt Chamberlain's size 24. And I have to say, in our defense, I probably shouldn't. We've been saying it all along here. We've been saying it all along about Trump and Putin. Okay. So Margaret says, Manchurian candidate, the government shutdown is a part of Putin's plot to destroy America. Trump is a traitor, and it's possible others in the government are compromised. What else can account for their silence? How long must we wait for Mueller? something horrific is going to happen. By the way, I am absolutely in agreement with you. I feel that there is a shoe that's going to drop, and I know that Trump is in the corner like a rat.
That's right.
And he's going to bite, and it'll be a terrible thing.
Yep.
But I don't think Republicans in Congress have the ties to Putin. I think the Republicans in Congress are backing Trump because they still perceive that Trump holds the cards in terms of the popularity in the Republican Party and their votes.
And Supreme Court appointments.
Right.
I mean,
and they're willing to hold their nose as long as they can. He'll push through the legislation
right.
that they want.
It's the policy in
which
the
is
courts.
which is what the conservatives right. and the.
But he hasn't been getting much of that.
No. I mean, look, he had both houses of Congress, and he couldn't get the wall. Couldn't get funding for the right. wall. So
Libby, I am not absolutely sure he wants that wall as much as, wait one second. As much as he wants the issue. I think he wants the issue. It shows that he's doing what they want him to.
Well, I mean, and it's come out recently that the whole notion of the wall was just a memory thing that his campaign people gave him so that he would stay on message during the campaign.
Right, because he wouldn't be able to
remember anything
more basic than just keep going with the wall, immigration.
Right. And Rochelle writes, comment, shutdown. It occurs to me that one angle of the shutdown that no one is discussing is how the credit card companies are making out like bandits. Before bartering with your landlord to paint walls in exchange for rent, one is likely to first max out their credit card and pay exorbitant fees for that, quote, privilege. An analysis of how the credit card companies have fared in this crisis would be illuminating. That's from Rochelle in New Paltz. But I have to say, it's an interesting issue, except that Americans have been maxing out their credit cards for a long time.
There are unfortunately going to be folks who will somehow make out well in this.
Yes.
But I don't think people have been maxing out. I don't think this is the blame of Trump.
Right.
So Dave says furloughed workers. Can the furlough workers apply for unemployment insurance? Do we know that? I think yes.
They can.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think probably
can.
Yes. Yeah.
And but again, as we've said, that's the furloughed workers. There are the subcontractors who, are not furlough workers but do work for the federal government.
Yeah, but they can apply for unemployment too, can't they, Barry? Because when you think of it, they got to be working for somebody.
If they lose their jobs, they probably could,
but
too.
But they'd have to lose their jobs yeah. as the subcontractors.
Okay, and Ali says, Dems non-focus. Dems need to be framing the conversation, not in terms of winning the fight over the wall, but eloquently discussing America's strength for the higher moral ground. I'm not hearing enough of this. And during the shutdown, Dems should be putting forth immigration reform ideas. Once shutdown is done, these ideas will be in the public forum, showing efforts to go forward. And that's from Allie. And then Jennifer writes, getting paid at the end. There's so many workers, small business owners, contractors who will not, in capital letters, get paid in the end. They will suffer and may never recover. This should be a major part of the story. Well, we've been talking about that, and we will continue to. And R writes, R. Jeremy, bad idea. Yes, it is important to know what is said between Trump and Putin, and it's true that this can be said to be a one-off situation, but the idea of forcing a translator to testify is a bad idea. It introduces pressures that would be felt by the translator that corrupt the needed neutrality and objectiveness in translations. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a president of the United States who is threatening and, by his actions, leading us into fascism. And you say that the more important thing is maintaining the neutrality of the translator? I don't think so.
And that would maintain the neutrality of the translator. All we would be asking the translator is to translate what was said. We're not asking them for opinion or to provide any sort of deep secrets that no one else would know.
Nicole says, Trump, does anyone else think that the shutdown may be Trump's way to bring the U.S. down? Sooner or later, we will lose our gatekeepers against terrorism and be entirely vulnerable. Machiavelli strikes again, and I'm really scared this time. Thanks from Nicole. Paul says, it's the oligarchs. You imbue Trump and his cabinet members with a sense of patriotism to the U.S. when you ask why they behave as they do. These people are corporate oligarchs. Their allegiance to the global corporate cabal is to the global corporate cabal. The U.S. is simply their biggest source of wealth creation. The situational paradigm has changed, Paul in Saratoga. And And Rich says, McConnell, his wife works for Trump. Other than that, he is compromised by the Russians or others. Rich from Amherst. Mike from Malta says, according to web sources, including OpenSecrets.org, Mitch McConnell's net worth is $26 million, not his outside income at $22 million per year, as your guest said. I called on that one, by the way, Mike. I didn't mention that,
as
you may remember.
Yes.
Okay. And...
That must be a great fly in the wall to listen to Senator McConnell's at night when they both come home. She works. She's in the
Secretary of Transportation.
She's right. She's in the cabinet. You know, and they come back and these are longtime smart Washington politicians. You got to wonder as they digest this and in private, do they share the same sentiment that others who have worked for Trump have? Which
he's
is
an idiot.
Yeah.
Okay. And Linda from Hurley. Republicans don't care about the shutdown. Remember that they want to shrink the government so small that they could drown it in a bathtub. Linda from Hurley. And then finally, good morning, panel. Oh, this is a good one. Alan is right. If Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez were old enough to run for president, darn tootin' she would win. Beto is good, but he's not comparable. In my humble opinion, he's far more of a same old establishment Democrat. But let me tell you, folks, what's happening here is the Democrats are really... really furious with her because she's running primary candidates against them and the rest of it, and this is something.
We are out of time. We'll be back with the Governor and Alan right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. 5 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we welcome the Governor of the State of New York, Andrew Cuomo, to discuss the topics of the day with Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Uh-huh. I think I hear you. Governor, tell me, and I ask this because you are a senior leader in the United States, and this is on everybody's tongues this morning. Is it possible we have a Manchurian candidate in the White House right now?
First, you hear me, doctor, when you want to hear me. It's called selective hearing.
True, all true.
Look, I think what is, I am not overly shocked by this president's actions. I am shocked that people seem continually shocked. You know, human nature tends to be a pattern, and the pattern tends to repeat. What this president has decided is he's appealing to a very small base of people who elected him in a crowded primary field for president, and they were the most conservative, radically conservative people in the country, and he is continuing to court them. Obviously, this whole issue with the wall, common sense, you could solve this in 11 seconds. Democrats are not against border security. They voted for border security. You have to have border security. Otherwise, you don't have an entrance if everything is open.
Yeah. But I asked a specific question, Governor, respectfully, of course, as always. Do you think it's possible that we have a paid agent of the Russians in the White House?
You know, I think we'll get the facts when Mueller puts out his report. I think anything is possible in this world and in this current milieu. But I don't want to start to fuel conspiracy theories. Let's just separate issues. We'll have a Mueller report. Let them give it to the public, deal with that then, and in the meantime, deal with the governmental issues, which are complicated enough, doctor, without spinning a conspiratorial web around them.
Yes, but when I first asked you the question, I said to you, you think it's possible, and you said, I'm not surprised. Didn't you say something like that?
Well, I'm not surprised by anything that could happen here. With this president. But I do believe we are in a really dangerous period in this country, which, by the way, is why I think the state's actions are more important than ever before. But I don't want to delve into possible conspiracy theories. They only complicate the governmental. Let's deal with one set at a time. And you're going to have the Mueller report. If he is a paid agent, if his family's a paid agent, if he employed paid agents, you'll find out. So let's not speculate. Let's try to resolve what we can.
Now, I have a large question for you, but I want you to answer it very quickly because I got about 3,000 things I got to ask you here. So tomorrow you got the State of the State slash budget address. And why are you doing it now instead of the end of the month?
This is a different time than we've ever been in, right? Government is a moment in time. You respond to the circumstances. The modality I've used here is I laid out an agenda in early December of legislative priorities. I then did an inaugural address where I laid out priorities. This budget is going to be complicated. I want the legislature to have the facts sooner than later. So I already laid out the legislative agenda. I want to lay out the budget agenda because the two interconnect. You know, this theory of, well, I'll do policy, and then we'll talk about budget. It doesn't really work, Alan.
Right. No, you're right about that. Okay. So one of the things I'm particularly interested in is your raise of the age of tobacco purchases from 20 to 21, from 18. Why is this important?
It is important because hopefully the older we get, the wiser we get. We've learned more about tobacco and the dangers of tobacco. Yes, 18 years old, you're mature and you're given responsibilities.
You can fight wars.
Yes, but we know this can kill you. And if we can help our young people to make a decision when they are a little more wise, a little more mature, because this is something that can kill you. Let's be honest. And the more we know, the more certain we are. And it's also a tremendous, besides the moral and ethical saving lives, it's a tremendous cost to the public. And I know 18-year-olds will say, I don't need you to tell me. I just went through that with three 18-year-olds. So I get it. But I think those few years, you're a little smarter, you're a little wiser, there's a little less peer pressure, and I think we'll save lives.
Don't you open up a black market by doing that? I mean, we've been watching that with marijuana.
Look, you have that now anyway, right? I don't want to give my kids more information than I need to prove my hypocrisy. There were kids buying cigarettes now who are not 18. Let's be honest.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Anyway, so then I want to move on to the plastic bag ban. Now, we have that. We're way ahead of New York in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, where we have not only marijuana pot shops, but we also have a ban on plastic bags. What took you so long?
What took me so long? You are a provocative doctor. I tried and failed in the past. I want to try and succeed this time. To me, it is a common sense issue. It's degrading of the environment. It's expensive. It's polluting our waterways. It's polluting our urban areas, our landscape. And it's unnecessary. It's just one of those things that are unnecessary. We can provide renewable bags. We can do it without cost. Expensive, ugly, dangerous, ruins the environment, and it's purely unnecessary.
When I walk out of the of the supermarket. Quite frequently, my and I pay an extra penny for my paper bag. Quite frequently, doesn't do the job. What is to be said about that? I mean, no.
I will give you personally a heavy-duty
but I
bag
can't remember
that
to bring...
will do the job.
Yeah, I know.
You bring it to the store, you use it, you bring it home, you bring it back to the store.
But I never remember.
And by the way,
I
bagged a lot of groceries in my day. And back in the day, we only had paper bags. Okay, you double bagged. But generations somehow figured it out, Doctor.
I voted for it, Great Barrington. Okay, so now Republicans of the Senate have long blocked the Child Victims Act, and you're going to be promoting that in Tuesday's speech. Is there a good reason to listen to the GOP on this issue? And exactly, remind everybody what it is.
There is no good reason. Justice is justice. If you could argue that this was the cruelest intrusion and violation of justice. These are people who were in authority in the position of moral responsibility, many of them religious members, clergy members, who sexually abused children. We have a statute of limitations that limits the amount of time that a person could bring an action. In general, the statute of limitations, I think, has a lot of merit to it. But these are special circumstances where you had children who didn't want to come forward, whose parents didn't want them to come forward, who were embarrassed, who were confused. This was a religious leader in the community. And they've lived with this pain for decades. And what they're saying is it's partially about the economics, but I think it's more about the vindication for people who were violated, for society to say, I acknowledge that you were violated and that justice was not done, and you deserve justice. Marriage equality that we passed, most people said it was about marriage. It was about equality. It was about LGBTQ members who said, why is my love judged by society as less significant than heterosexual love? I'm just as much of a person and my love is just as valid. These are people saying, I was violated. All right, it was a priest, it was a this, it was a that. I was violated. And society won't acknowledge it.
So why do the Republicans in the Senate say no all of these times? Have you ever talked to them about it? What do they say when you're
Oh, I've talked to them many times about
what,
it.
What
they raise
say?
The economic consequences.
You mean towards the church?
Well, this could be financially detrimental to a church, for example. I understand that. But I also understand what Pope Francis says, who is adamant on this issue. And Pope Francis says the civil courts should handle these issues. That's Pope Francis. I am a Catholic. I'm a former altar boy. I'm going with the Pope on this one.
So, when you said that to the Republicans, they said back to you, you're going to kill the church, and you're a Catholic, and I know your dad because I went through that with him at the time. Some of the Catholic hierarchy got very angry at him. Are you experiencing any of that?
Oh, I've experienced that all my political life. I experienced that when I said a woman had a right to choose. I've experienced that at an exponential level when New York was the first large state to pass marriage equality against the Catholic Church. So they've been against me on all of these issues.
As
they were my father, by the way. Remember, they threatened to excommunicate my father.
Well,
and excommunication
was
very bad, by the way. You can't get into heaven if you were excommunicated.
Especially if you believe that, and I believe your father did. But there was one bishop who said down in the Hudson Valley, if I remembered, front page of the Post, you'll burn in hell. That's pretty strong stuff.
Yeah, well, look, I'm sure, I know there are priests who say that about me. They said it about me for a woman's right to choose, for marriage equality. And I'm sure there'll be priests who say it about me for this. Only problem with that threat is once you know you're going to burn in hell, doctor, you may as well do the right thing.
It's cold out there. So here's my question. You know, there are those in the legislature who now want to make the property tax, your property tax, permanent. Is that a good idea?
I think making the property tax cap permanent is a very good idea, especially when you have property tax owners now who are under assault because they just lost the federal deductibility of the property tax. I think, as you know, property tax by far and away is the highest tax in the state, much higher than the state income tax. I think we're in danger of losing people from this state because of the cost of property tax. We have one of the highest property taxes in the nation. So to the extent we can say to people, we have a 2% cap, it's going to stay a 2% cap, and feel confident in staying in this state, I think it's very important. The people who tend to be against the property tax cap, not coincidentally, are from the areas that don't have a high property tax. But if you're from Long Island, if you're from upstate, upstate pays the highest property taxes in the country as a percentage of home value. It matters. New York City, the property taxes are not as onerous. So I think people from New York City don't feel it the same way representatives from Long Island or upstate New York feel it.
The New York POST, otherwise known as the Post, has you on the front page, a caricature with your hand on a subway car saying, "The buck doesn't stop here. Governor demands full MTA control, wants city to pay half." So your answer?
My answer is this. The MTA was put together to avoid any liability for any elected official. It was Machiavellian the way they did it. Why? Because these fares go up and no politician wants to be blamed for fares or poor operation. So the governor got some appointments and the mayor got some appointments.
Well, you got most of them. You got six of them, right?
Yeah, let's
and
get,
that's the most.
Let's do facts.
I'm doing facts.
Six out of 14.
Yeah, but everything
and
else
then
is divided
the,
up.
Yeah. Here's the caveat.
Yeah.
The mayor of the city of New York can unilaterally veto the capital budget of the subway system. The speaker of the assembly can unilaterally veto. The Senate leader can unilaterally veto, which means you can get something passed by the board, and then you have a unilateral veto that can't even be overridden, by the way. Nobody's in charge. And look, doctor, you know me a long time.
I do.
I have taken on projects that no politician would go near. I've taken on construction projects that were stalled for years. I believe it's my job to take on the tough projects, but I'm not going to assume responsibility without the authority. I'm not going to say I'm responsible for the MTA. But by the way, if the Senate leader, John Flanagan, old Senate leader, decided he wanted to play politics, he could veto the whole plan and there was nothing I could do about it. Or the assembly speaker, or the mayor. It was designed this way. So nobody's responsible. The fare went up. Who did it? Who knows? I am willing to assume responsibility, but I'm not doing it without authority.
What's the likelihood you'll get that authority, Governor?
It's up to them. It's up to them. If they want to keep this mess, then let them keep doing what they're doing. But I'm going to make it clear that the people know that it is continuing because that's what the political forces want. You know, who's in charge now? The bureaucracy is in charge. Okay. And it runs as a bureaucracy, and there's no accountability. We had a board of education in New York City, and the point was it's an amorphous board. Everybody's on the board, and nobody knows who's in charge. Give the mayor control. I supported it. It was under Mayor Bloomberg.
Yep.
Why? Because somebody should be in charge. When everyone is in charge, no one is in charge. And this is a lot of garbage. Well, the governor has six. Yeah, I have six of 14. I didn't do new math, but six of 14 is not a majority. And I've never heard of a system where a board acts and then four people can unilaterally veto those actions on the capital plan, which is the most important piece. And by the way, nobody even knows they can. You did not know that the speaker and the Senate leader and the mayor and the governor could veto the board, did you?
How did you know I didn't know?
I knew. Could hear, I heard it in your voice. I heard it when I said it, and you said, oh, geez, I'm supposed to be the good doctor. And I didn't know.
What do you think about Senator Gillibrand setting up a presidential headquarters in Troy?
I'm glad it's in Troy. You know, this presidential election is going to be a reflection of the times. There's going to be a lot of people who want their voice heard, and that's what makes democracy democracy. And we'll see how it plays out.
And now I have a personal favor to ask of you, of course. That shouldn't do it, but I live in Great Barrington. We're going to get a lot of taxes out of that, the four pot shops that we're going to have. Four. And, you know, you guys are stalling here. The more you stall in New York State, the more taxes that'll come to downtown Great Barrington. Don't you see?
Yeah. Well, don't spend the money because I'm going to propose tomorrow, and that's one of the reasons we have it in New Jersey, we have it in Massachusetts. So it's not really a question anymore of should you do it. We're sort of past that bridge. It was like casinos. We were surrounded by casinos, but we sat here in New York and said, well, we deny that they exist. The recreational sale of marijuana is here.
But you see, you, sir, said right from the beginning that there were some real dangers. Somebody might crash into somebody when they're high. Well, how can you change just on the basis that you need the money?
I didn't, and those weren't the facts. The fact was I did have trepidations about it, and I impaneled a panel of experts, Department of Health, State Police, people who are expert in the area. They said there are risks, but the benefits outweigh the risks. So it's not for the money. The benefits outweigh the risks. It has to be regulated. We're going to regulate it in this state. We think it could raise about $300 million in revenue, depending on how it works. $300 million does not make us or break us, as you know. So it's not just about the money. It is about the revenue. More for me, it's about the regulation and making sure that we protect young people. That's why we said an age of 21 years old. We gave local governments the ability to opt out if they want, so they could do that. But it's the regulation and the protection. And to the extent we're going to create economic opportunity, getting that economic opportunity to the poor communities that paid the price rather than having these rich corporations come in and having another payday.
I only got 3 minutes, but what else do you want to tell us about your state of the state budget? What's going to say make us say, golly, gee whiz, Martha, what's that about?
I think you're going to see the most aggressive agenda that I have put forward. Why? Because I now have the ability to get it passed with a Democratic Senate where I had a Republican Senate. I also think this is a moment in time where the federal government is totally dysfunctional and the state has to step in. Reproductive Health Act, Protect a Woman's Right to Choose. I want a constitutional amendment. I don't trust the politics and the pendulum anymore. Right. I want to see it written into the Constitution, allowing people to vote. Why do the polls in upstate New York open at noon for primaries?
That's
and
crazy.
Downstate they open at 6 a.m.?
That ain't fair.
Let's fix these crazy irregularities and injustices that have existed for so long. We have a Democratic Senate, Democratic Assembly, Democratic Governor. Let's not make the mistakes of 2009, which was a debacle, and let's flip it on its head and have the greatest progressive accomplishments in 100 days that this state has ever seen.
Okay, now I got a minute, but the boss of the assembly, some people, me, I call him Boss Hasty because he's boss of the Bronx first, now is saying, you know, he seems to be angry with you over the pay raise situation. Are you having a fight? Do you talk on the phone? What's going on?
Yeah, look, this is not, if you get emotional, you shouldn't be in this business, right? Because
right.
It does a disservice to the public. The speaker is unhappy about the pay raise. He's made that clear. The legislators got a $50,000 pay raise, but a ban on outside income and a reduction in the number of Lulus. He said that he's unhappy with the commission that made the selection, because I didn't do it. We had a commission that we all agreed to, of controllers, Bill Thompson, Carmichael, Tom DiNapoli, and Scott Stringer. But he is unhappy about the ban on pay raises, the ban on outside income and the reduction in Lulus. But I'm sure he's a professional. And look, in this business, there's not a day that goes by that I'm not disappointed with something I didn't get.
You're terrific for being with us. We so appreciate it, Governor. Keep on coming back as long as you can stand it. And in the meantime, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for hearing me, Doctor, when you choose.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.